So thanks everyone for coming to this celebratory New Directions event. And can you hear me in the back? Okay. And in this wonderful room where we're surrounded by images from the search for the Holy Grail, which you could think of as knowledge of the divine. Apparently it took Edwin Abbey 11 years to paint the murals in this room, for which he was paid $15,000. The myth and history and song and poetry he celebrates in these paintings, he dedicated not to science or the classics alone, but to fiction, poetry, romance, to what he called simply the reading of the people. And today it's a huge honor to have these three stellar poets reading for us, Forrest Gander, Susan Howe, and Michael Palmer. We are here in part to celebrate the 75th anniversary of New Directions. Originally, we were going to take audience questions at the end, but because of the time, we're going to ask that you could join us in the room across the hall for the book signing, and I hope you'll go and talk to the poets after that. I'd also like to thank the Boston Public Library for letting us use this beautiful space, and the co-sponsors of the event, the Boston Book Festival, the Massachusetts Poetry Festival, and Chloe Garcia Roberts and Christina Davis at the Woodbury Poetry Room. And so I'm going to introduce the first poet. With New Directions, Forrest Gander has published the poetry collection Science and Steepleflower, Torn Awake, Eye Against Eye, and the lyrical novel As a Friend, which was published in France last year and which Jeanette Winterson in the New York Times called an unsettling book, haunting and haunted. New Directions also publishes his translation of Mexican poet Coral Bracho's Firefly Under the Tongue, Selected Poems of Coral Bracho. This year, he was a recipient of a Library of Congress Witter Binner Fellowship. Last year, a Selected Poems was published in Japan, and in recent years, he has read at literary festivals in Nicaragua, India, Libya, amongst other distant climes. Two other books of his are out this year. One, a co-translation with Kyoko Yoshida called Spectacle and Pigsty, Selected Poems of Kawao Nomura. And in Las Canchas, Ball Courts of Mexico, his poetry is featured with photographs by Dan Boris. Also just out, a poem he wrote in collaboration with the dancers Eiko and Koma is threaded through their new comprehensive monograph, Eiko and Koma, Time is Not Even, Space is Not Empty. Gander will be reading from his new collection of poems, Core Samples from the World, about which the Huffington Post reviewer Anish Shivani wrote, "I don't think I've read a more ambitious poetry book by an American this year." The book is threaded together with stunning photographs by Raymond Meeks, Graciela Iturbide, and Lucas Foglia. Please welcome Forrest Gander.
Thanks a lot, Jeffrey. I really can't imagine any company that I would feel more intimidated reading with than the company I have here. Evaporation. "How cold it looks on the yellow linoleum," she said. "Like watching a thumb war," he mumbled. "Spent the whole damn morning with the damn dishwasher man," she alerted him, "standing in line, watching the nape of the man in front of me," he remembered. "Perseid meteors from the radiant in the pre-dawn," she read. "Is it really called Sutra of Angular Severity?" he wondered. "Crossed out and then steaded," she noted. "High-speed dust fluorescing as it collides with solar wind," he read. "Now it's flu season," she wondered. "Should we give the boy an eye wash?" "They call it painting your throat," he explained, dipping the gauze in iodine. "In their component fatigue, the days," she mumbled. "And then you were talking in French patois and wanting to go out," he said. "To be defiled is to be recognizable to yourself, she thought. This poem is also called Evaporation. The book is a series of long poems in collaborations with photographers, and they're divided by these little evaporation poems. This one is for the Mexican poet Coral Bracho and the Mexican poet Marcelo Uribe. Evaporation. In increments enunciated, oh, within, where the meanings in increments lie bare, she says, oh, to her friend, who is watching, I am watching, a cat slink while we walk, keeping pace with us through the fenestrated walls, adobe, of a ruined house. Oh, this finger, in the village where she grew up, her accent makes clear, this finger, she says, delighted, holding it up, has a heart in it, pulse, and thinking I don't see the friend, she takes from her purse a toothpaste tube, purse open. As she walks, we walk. Where's the cat? Along the soft path between adobe walls, squeezes toothpaste on her finger with its heart and smears it, looking away, against her upper and still looking away, lower teeth, then touches me with her breath. This is one of the sequences with a photographer. The photographer is Raymond Meeks, and we did a book together with Nesraeli Press. The photographs are of very primitive mining operations in Burma, or Myanmar, as it's called now. A clearing. Where are you going? Ghosted with dust. From where have you come? Dull assertiveness of the rock heap, a barren monarchy, wolf spider, size of a hand, encrusted with dirt at the rubble's edge. What crosses here goes fanged or spiked and draws its color from the ground. Xanthic shadow at the edges. Where are we going? Ghosted with dust. From where have we come? Stretcher loaded with clods by a spavined work shed. What does it mean, a cauterized topography? One step forward and he is with us. One step back, another realm absorbs him. The sense of epic loosened, unstrung, each one thinking it is the other who recedes like a horizon, the miraculous cage visible under his skin. I cannot be discarded, his eyes say. A flute that plays one note, a face. In the open pit at noon, men waning in brightness. I can be red, say the rocks, but not by you. The air burnished, almost mineral, like a thin peel of mica. Mound in the photograph, iris in the eye. What does it mean, a cauterized topography, to salvage rocks the color of all else, from all else the color of rock? I can be red, say her eyes, but not by you. As if the land had abandoned itself. Rain flushed from denuded hills, the soil powders in wind. One step forward and we are with them. One step back, another realm absorbs us. Don't pick up the rocks, he says, because rocks belong to the dead, xanthic shadow at the edges, the distance flat as horsehair plaster. Black knoll of tailings. There is nothing between his eyes and ours, not even invitation. Each stone carrying its death sentence into the animate world. Fly maggot eating the red ant's brain. The sense of epic loosened, unstrung, light broken off in the air. The twig's shadow has the same quality as the shadow of a man. glance held, an afterglow, all depth sponged away, the distance flat as horsehair plaster. Iris in an eye mound in the photograph. Don't pick him up, rocks say, because the dead belong to the rocks. Encrusted with dirt at the rubble's edge, wolf spider the size of a hand. A man's shadow has the same quality as the shadow of a twig. What crosses here goes fanged or spiked and draws its color from the ground, the air burnished, almost mineral. And I'll finish with just the first poem I think of the last sequence in the book, which is called Love Green. And it's a series of photographs written with, it's a series of poems written with photographs, again by, this is also by Ray Meeks. I think I'm going to read the last poem, so pretend you've heard the whole thing and you're waiting to hear this last poem here. From Love Green. That she pours water from a pitcher over her mother's hair, the leaves flaring up, the dog's face blazed in early emperor dusk, the fragility of bird perched at a branch's tip, and later held her head in her hands as though it could not contain itself. Here, as the idiom of now, and here as the incapacity to call to mind any music whereof her face is not, inconceivably not, the last note, as if she had come to a corner of herself and were loitering. Ecdysis, the shedding of an outer layer of skin. The crippled dog leans against the fence to bark. Thank you.
Thanks, Forrest. Poet, essayist, literary critic, historian Susan Howe was awarded the 2011 Bollingen Prize for Poetry. The judge's citation reading in part, in more than three decades of writing, Susan Howe has discovered the ground of a new American poetry, one that combines the most unlikely elements, history and mysticism, Puritan New England devotional writing and the Irish folk ballad, visual lyricism and dramatic narrative, scholarship and memoir. She has given American poetry a new voice and a new language. Howe's books with new directions include the poetry collections The Europe of Trusts, Frame Structures, Early Poems, 1974 to 1979, The Nonconformist's Memorial, Pierce Arrow, The Midnight, Souls of the Labadee Tract, and her landmark cross-genre homage, My Emily Dickinson. She was also the author of the collection of essays, The Birthmark, Unsettling the Wilderness in American Literary History, which is named one of the International Books of the Year in the Times Literary Supplement. Howe will read from her new collection of poems, That This, about which the nation has said, mourning is given form and eventually closure as words and phrases, fragmented and deliquescent, gradually echo and respond to one another, their slow cohesion and antidote to death's apparent suddenness. The book includes some beautiful artwork by photographer James Welling, and one section of it, Frolic Architecture, was printed in a limited edition by the Grenfell Press. The same section of the book was also transformed into an absolutely haunting recording of Howe reciting in collaboration with composer and musician David Grubbs on Hammond organ, computer, and gravel. The CD was just released by Blue Chopsticks. You can also hear their performance live in Boston on November 1st, 5 p.m. at the Barker Center. And also to note, for those who will be in New York next week, Howe will be giving the Blaney Lecture for the Academy of American Poetry at NYU on October 13th, where she will talk about poetry and telepathy. Please welcome Susan Howe.
Now I have to finish the thing. Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. I'll be reading from That This, which is my most recent New Directions book, and it consists of three sections. I'm reading from two. The first is an essay called The Disappearance Approach, centered around the sudden death from a pulmonary embolism of my husband, Peter Hare, during the early morning hours of January 3rd, 2008. The day before, we had gone into Manhattan for my son's wedding at City Hall. When we got home that evening, we just took the train. I live in Guilford, which is near New Haven, so it was just a short trip. When we got home that evening, he said he was feeling tired and went to bed after a light supper. Peter was a philosopher and interested in the history of American philosophy and thought, and we had that very much in common. And around the time of his death, I'd been looking at the Jonathan Edwards archive in the Beinecke Library, as you'll find out. And I'm going to begin with a few sections from The Disappearance Approach and then move straight into a few sections from Frolic Architecture, so that are a second but related part of the book. Okay, this is from The Disappearance Approach. I've been reading some of W.H. Auden's The Sea and the Mirror. One beautiful sentence about the way we all reach and reach, but never touch. A skinny covering overspreads our bones, and our arms are thin wings. In an early morning half-waking dream, you were lying on the bed beside me in a dark suit. I recently touched your black jacket, the one we bought together on sale 2 years ago in Barney's. We were thinking about getting another this month because you had worn the original to pieces. It's in the closet now, an object for storage beside your ashes. Maybe the jacket was in my mind as distant dream knowledge of the way one figure can substitute for another with a cord attached. So what is false gives life to what is fair. I thought you were really you until I woke up back in myself. Jonathan Edwards was the only son among 10 unusually tall sisters, their minister father jokingly referred to as his 60 feet of daughters. Esther Stoddard Edwards, also known for her height, taught her 11 children and others in Northampton in a school that consisted of a downstairs room in their farmhouse. Later, they received the same education Timothy provided to local boys in his parish in East Windsor, Connecticut. The girls were tutored along with their brother. In some cases, they tutored him in theology, philosophy, Latin, Greek, Hebrew, history, grammar, and mathematics. All married late for that period. The Beinecke Library in New Haven owns a vast collection of Edwards family papers. It contains letters, diaries, notebooks, essays, and more than 1,200 sermons. Apart from a journal kept by Esther Edwards Burr after her marriage, and a few letters to and from the sisters, daughters, and Sarah, all that remains of this 18th century family's impressive tradition of female learning are a bedsheet Esther Stoddard Edwards probably spun and embroidered herself, Sarah's wedding dress fragment, and several pages from Hannah Edwards Wetmore's private writings, along with posthumous excerpts collected and transcribed with commentary by her daughter, Lucy Wetmore Whittlesey. The Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford owns a fragment of Mary Edwards' crewel embroidery and a pair of silk shoes worked by Miss Hannah Edwards, daughter of the Reverend Timothy Edwards, wife of Seth Wetmore, Esquire of Middletown. Only tossing color coins into a well of language, While faces of magic contained in little stories outside the purview of philosophy scramble to help each other, quid pro quo. Esther, 1695 through 1760. Elizabeth, 1697 through 1733. Anne, 1699 through 1790. Mary, 1701 through 1776. Jonathan, 1703 through 1758. Eunice, 1705 through 1788. Abigail, 1707 through 1767, Jerusha, 1710 through 1729, Hannah, 1713 through 1773, Lucy, 1715 through 1736, Martha, 1718 through 1794. If your names are only written and no originals exist, do you have a real existence for us? What happens to names when time stops? Nothing happens. There is no when. The Beinecke Library's digital photography studio is located in a windowless room downstairs. Here, objects to be copied according to the state-of-the-art Northlight HID copy light system are prepared for reproduction. Each light is packed with 900 watts of ceramic discharge lamps and requires a typical 15-ampere 120-volt outlet. The lamps are doubly fan-cooled with one chamber for the hot lamp side and one fan for the electronic side. A diffusion screen spreads light evenly onto the copy board while protecting the art object or manuscript from heat. This can be replaced with white plexiglass for three-dimensional artwork. Black curtains surrounding the copy table protect the photographer's vision and at the same time prevent light intensity from bleeding. One or two stuffed oblong cloth containers known in the trade as snakes hold the volume open. Facing pages are held down flat with transparent plastic strips. And when I was out of my head and thought myself sick and lost, or at a riverside and among strangers that would not direct me home. That's Hannah Edwards, remembering her delirium during an illness in 1736. Under the fan-cooled copy lights, she speaks to herself of the loneliness of being Narcissus. Art is a mystery, artifice its form. Hannah has taken off her embroidered shoes. She is dipping her bare feet in varieties of light. On the Shoreline Express, I like to sit on the side where between Stony Creek and Guilford, I can see my neighbor's house, and in winter, a little further up the road, catch a split-second glimpse of ours through the window as the train passes. I suppose I'm trying to capture a moment before mirror vision, because when you view objects that lie in front of your eyes as well as others in the distance behind, what you see in the mirror has already been interpreted, so far as you can tell. More and more, I have the sense of being present at a point of absence where crossing centuries may prove to be like crossing languages, sound waves. It's the difference between one stillness and another stillness. Even the invisible scotch tape I recently used when composing Frolic Architecture leaves traces on paper when I run each original sheet through the Canon copier. Returning home after only a day or two away, I often have the sense of intruding on infinite and finite local evocations and wonder how things are in relation to how they appear. This sixth sense of another reality, even in simplest objects, is what poets set out to show, but cannot once and for all. If there is an afterlife, then we still might. If not, not. And this is a few sections from Frolic Architecture. That this book is a history of a shadow that is a shadow of me mystically, one in another, another, another to subserve. Nent the der own osi elan and a sit in one. No sun nor did the wax nt, yet did the earthen, the circumambed, her arms alone, oh, though there could tread, air was dark. All objects, things strove. Embody my body slipping down, full toward its own sermon, rough, a mist, sermon, rough, of crack, sermon. Oh, that I, then be at rest, more sure, was, these alu, shadow ever, long shell, finding no, for they, but find a bewildered, ever, weary of them, that is first, then was ever, for they ever had. Had the wings of a dove, but whether could I fly, oh, and abiding portion, and no ring, deceiving enjoyments, where shall I find real? I wander from mountain. Oh, that I could find rest for the soul of weary myself. Walking just below my father's orchard after I, walking just below my father's orchard after I, religion and the concerns of my soul, my business, religion and the concerns of my soul, my business, strayed for and labored after an awakening sense of ter I had taped, after I had taken up many res, concerns of my business, and after I'd set to it, and of sense of my miserable con, my miserable, with a great deal of concern, sensible, I thought, and negligent, notwithstanding so old in running over the south fence, and notwithstanding to be sensible, then now what made me cast in my mind whether I had not, but I considered I was very too much. I was leaning, one chain of thought. I saw manner that, ooh, an image of it on my mind, as what should, but I attempted to read, but out one chain intercepting and covering the. I had as lively ascible, and did not seem to be, had seen it abruptly, and so strong that it, I attempted to look upon it as supernat by a piece of Cicero of imagination, and that distemper, I was seized with it. The dark white dressed gods, fam the lift street tend to a front. Opening the house door, she stood hesitating, whether she all, whether set at great distance from this world. It then appeared to me a vain, toilsome. Betance were strangely wandered, lost, and comfort to me that I was so separate. Worldly affairs by my present afflictions, though melancholy, was yet in a quiet frame. Durs, I was in. It was not without a deep, prepared for death. And I did set myself to belong to nobody, field, etc. The alterations which to produce, the voices of a vast number of beings in my mind, and soon carried my ideas much into, oh, be very much ravished with it. And sometimes had scarce any definite ideas, felt like a wave in the air, held there by the something delirious and sometimes soft, yet I would agree rational and consulted with myself about it. In my imagination, only a thought I wrote in the Romans world, I used to be there, felt soft, or in a sort, Ridley knew who or what I was, and thereby the music was, and therefore lost I was. Consulted with myself about it, and was ready. I remember the summer before my sister Jerusha's death, making, and I was leaning over the south fence and thinking in this manner, that I was never likely to do better, and where should I go, etc. Thank you.
Poet, essayist, critic, translator of Immanuel Hocquard, Rambeau, Hudibras, among others, and editor of Code of Signals, Recent Writings and Poetics, Michael Palmer has published 7 books with New Directions, including At Passages, Codes Appearing, Poems 1979 to 1988, The Lion Bridge, Selected Poems 1972 to 1995, The Promises of Glass, Company of Moths, and the collection of essays and talks, Active Boundaries, where one of the luminous centers in the book is a book within a book called The Danish Notebook. I recently saw a photograph of Michael Palmer reading amidst a cloud of Chinese peepaw players. He was in Hong Kong, where a selected poems of his was published in Chinese and where he had been invited to give a series of readings and talks. Also earlier this year, a French edition of First Figure was published by José Corti in Paris. Palmer has received both the Shelley Memorial Prize and the Wallace Stevens Award, the latter citation calling him one of the most original craftsmen at work in English at the present time. His poetry is at once a dark and comic interrogation of the possibilities of representation in language, but its continuing surprise is its resourcefulness and its sheer beauty. For over 30 years, he has collaborated with the Margaret Jenkins Dance Company and is currently rehearsing with them for their next show that opens in San Francisco on November 3rd called Light Moves. Palmer will read from his new collection of poems, Thread, about which Patrick Pritchett in Jacket 2 has written. In these extraordinary poems, among the most moving and powerful of his career, the dead appear as companions on the way, intimately joined to the enterprise of living. Thread transforms elegy into crystalline paleography, a writing before a writing that is also beyond it. I also want to note that this Monday at 5:30, Palmer will be giving the Morris Gray reading at Harvard's Houghton Library. Please welcome Michael Palmer.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Indeed, treasured member of the New Directions staff and wonderful poet in his own right, and as the active editor of my essay collection, Active Boundaries, saved my ass in that particular situation. We are here to celebrate the 75th anniversary of New Directions, and it's my real pleasure to do so. An extraordinary press with an extraordinary history of publishing the literature it believes in, and I'm reminded by the present company that, as Bob Creeley once said about New Directions, it is the company. It's the company we are honored to keep, both past and present, and I'm sure future. I'll read from the book Thread, which came out this year, and I guess I will read simply from the section of thread called thread, which I think of as one poem in 18 sections. I don't know if I'll have time for all 18, but 18 sections are stanzas in a sense, in the Italian sense of the rooms of a building that I'm finding my way through, a kind of labyrinth, if you will. There are a number of poets whom I invoke in the in thread as guides, I suppose, like Virgil. And so I'll, as we go along, I'll mention who these names are. The poem actually begins in the Miró Museum in Barcelona, where my wife, Kathy Simon, an architect, significantly for this occasion. What my wife and I were visiting the Miró Museum, where I mentioned these pieces of Miró, Nighthawk and Sunbird, which started me off, gave me the opening to this work. Nighthawk and Sunbird, beauty of the world, beauty of the world. How can one write beauty of the world? Fumbled for each other in the dark. Familiar, unfamiliar, the touch of watery air. Walls, weight of watery air. Cards scattered across a table. Game of chance they had played. Can you hear in the back? Yes? Okay. How could you reply if you couldn't hear in the back? All right. So, Alyosha, this is Alexey Parshakov, is Alyosha here, a wonderful Russian poet with the madness of many Russian poets whom I had the agony of translating into English, who died a few years ago, and this is a kind of elegy for Alyosha. So, Alyosha, maybe it is true that we live in perhaps the earth, perhaps the sky, chemical winds, auroras, tides, chalk hills and blistered pines, and the microtonal bells. And those who swallow ink, the ringers of bells, perhaps they will inherit the bogs and salt marshes, the swamp grass and samphire, jacket with torn pockets, shredded cuffs. We'll inherit the seafoam, the dust, the ferrous mud that reabsorbs us. Mahmoud in this next section is Mahmoud Darwish, the great Palestinian poet who also died a few years ago. From the mercury fountain, Mahmoud spills a stream, echo of things, sun to stone speaking, cicada to poppy, not milk of paradise, no river of stars in the dark, just the bent wheel of days, meaningless ripples in the heat. Raul is, in this next poem, Raul Zurita, the great Chilean poet who has written, one of the world's great poets, really, who has written very eloquently about the disappeared under Pinochet and tried to, in a sense, give voice to that time of horrendous fascist imprisonment and killing. He himself spent time in prison, was tortured. From the eyeless mountains, Raoul, fall voices beneath voices. We hear the hawthorn, the penstemon, the goldenrod. Even here, hawthorn and goldenrod, shadows of wheeling turns, mountains, then sea, sea swallowing mountains, we hear. And we hear the tongues of days, names melting into sea, wave mouths, indifferent air. Even here, lodestar, lexicon, labyrinthos. Along the corridors of the invisible world, Raoul, gardeners raise such flowers as need no light. such flowers watered by voices as need no eyes to be seen. It is the role of the lovers to set fire to the book. In the palm garden at night, they set fire to the book and read by the light of the book. Syllables, particles of glass, they pass back and forth in the dark. The two, invisible, transparent in the book, their voices muffled by the book. It is the role of the lovers to be figures of the book, the illegible book, changing as the pages turn, now joined, now clawing the fruit from each other's limbs, now interlaced, now tearing at throat and vein, then splayfoot, then winged, then ember, as the music of the book rustling through the palms instructs. The robin mentioned in the next section is the San Francisco, well, ultimately San Francisco poet Robin Blazer, who was part of the Jack Spicer, Robert Duncan circle, but who lived for the last, I guess, 40 years of his life, something like that, in Canada. The moth, robin, we've both learned at different times from its motion, a quantum of nothing, could we say, dusk to dark morning before full day, a battering of wings, night notes sounding beyond our extinction. Circling lost through the narrow streets of the old city, among the shuttered shops, they hear nothing but the howling of dogs drifting down from the hills above, from the dark of the parched hills, threnos, thread, lament, barely vibrating web of sleep's winding streets. Roberto, in the next section, is Roberto Bolaño, the great novelist, Chilean also. Even in dreams, Roberto, the police. We must count in Babylon. Surely in Babylon we must count. Count the days and the dead, the chambers of the palace, its stones, its steps, its flaring lamps. Must count the clouds, the petals of the flowers, the hours. We must count the hours as they pass, so slowly for the young, so swiftly for the withered masters of this place, ardent assassins of speech, hidden away. Surely in Babylon we must count the gardens tended, the towers raised by slaves in this city soon to be dust, count the days and the dead. Must we count the dust? There must suddenly have come a time, come a moment late in life when he desperately needed to write books as a way to survive in this life, books, then more books. And so he wrote of assassins and the night breeze, the ice dancer and the sky writer, the hang glider who fell so slowly before our eyes. We averted our eyes, went about our business as the waves folded over him, mangy dogs patrolling the shore. Wrote of himself and his double playing cards at a table covered in green baize, himself and his lover violently interlaced. Wrote of torturers lighter than air, offering a tender caress, insects buzzing philosophy, O Pascal, O Marquis de Sade. Statues bleeding from eyes and mouths of stone, infinite black top stretching out, infinite shredded ribbons of cloud. Wrote even while dying of time erasing time. Nighthawk and sunbird, who will tell of it? Shore's eyelid, earth's rim, light from extinguished stars bathing us in time's wake, time's long stream of slaughter and song. Some love the one more, some the other. Ave Manes, a specter, appeared in my dream. A shade with vulture bone flute calling to his dead is unwept, unremembered dead among the terraced hills and stubble fields, is needlessly dead in the rusting sands, is comically dead with lolling tongues, Lorca's fluted bones threaded among the nameless. The recent and the distant wind and water tossed dead stars beneath stones in nomine patri, and of the sun and of the piping, the signifying ghost, ghost of pentacles, ghost of music halls, spider-legged, spider-white ghost, is ancient, broken, unplayable flute. Under the sign of the alphabet, the rain fell up. The bodies in the quarry spoke of the Lord's great hunger and the Lord's blackened tongue. And they chanted the secret names of the Lord one by one. And the rain fell up, the bodies in the quarry danced, and the sky filled with sand the color of rust. The blind boys sang, and the dead men danced, and the deaf men heard their chants. Under the sign of the appetites, a rustle of silk, the barest sound, droplet of ink off the blood moon's faint glow, then ripple, then stream, then river of ink, darkest ink, invisible ink, flooding the clouds below, liquid hours below, liquid eyes dark as ink. And I dreamed we were still alive, dreamed we were not yet born, dreamed we were yet to be. From the mercury fountain, Mahmoud, flow the tenses, past, present, future, future past, first and last, daily acts. Desires, angels of slaughter and syntax, the zero and the zero plus one, deep eyes, slender wrists, coffee and speech, sleeplessness and its dreams, the meadow orchid low within the grass, evening primrose, cadence on the felt of the dice so casually thrown, the tumbled stones, the field of tolling flowers. Tenses of the present, Mahmoud. The impossible present, infinite presence threading now forward, now back. Amidst the shattered symmetries and scattered fictions between actual river and imagined shore, actual breath of wind through the frayed, half-open curtain, passing so suddenly over them those years ago, brief flare of the lamp, shadows that danced upon a wall. Gustav in this poem is Gustav Soben. I seem to be singing to the dead. I hope they can hear me. Wonderful American poet who lived in Provence for his entire adult life. Gustav, under earth, by the tiny grave pits, Merovingian words, we speak by the plague wall, by the house of the suicide, by the mount of winds sits the low house of stone, lies the silk maker's house, thread spun and gone, words are the distant home. And then the last. Chimera, sightless stars have colonized the meadow. Chimera, helicopters are birthing their young into the waves. Language of the waves, chimera, language of the owl, silent petrels by the salt shore, the plover repeating its note. Saw the singer in flames by the shore, watched her swallow her song, nowness in Neverland she sang, watched the palace disappear beneath the sea, while a later world sailed overhead, endless amusements of the cruise ship with no origin or port of call. Saw the singer in that ink-dark dream, neverness and nowness she sang, beauty of the world, broken world, she sang, chimera, such words the fire offered her. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. A couple announcements. There's one last event, or On October 25th at 6 p.m., the Woodbury Poetry Room is sponsoring an oral history initiative of George Oppen. Oppen's daughter, Linda Oppen, will be there along with Rachel Blau Duplessis and a couple of Oppen's close friends to talk about that significant American poet. Also, the Massachusetts Poetry Festival, the dates have finally been finalized. It's up in Salem, and it's in April 20th to 22nd. And I just add one more voice to this, because we're so happy at New Directions that Tomas Tranströmer won the Nobel Prize, and I just wanted to leave with this one poem that translated from the Swedish by Robin Fulton, and we publish his complete works. It's called The Blue Windflowers. To be spellbound, nothing's easier. It's one of the oldest tricks of the soil and springtime, the blue windflowers. They are in a way unexpected. They shoot up out of the brown rustle of last year in overlooked places where one's gaze never pauses. They glimmer and float, yes, float from their color. The sharp violet blue now weighs nothing. Here is ecstasy, but low-voiced. Career, irrelevant. Power and publicity, ridiculous. They must have given a great reception up in Nineveh with pomp and trump up, raising the rafters. And above all those brows, the crowning crystal chandeliers hung like glass vultures. Instead of such an over-decorated and strident cul-de-sac, the windflowers open a secret passage to the real celebration, quiet as death. So please join the poets across the room and thank them for being here.